Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Bert Weisbord, and I'm here to talk with J.B. Dickey, the highly regarded owner of the Seattle Mystery Bookshop, a Northwest institution. We're going to talk about the history of the bookstore, the issues facing independent booksellers, and how he sees the future for independent booksellers in Seattle. J.B. began working at the Seattle Mystery Bookshop one day per week in the summer of 1990 when Bill Farley opened the bookstore. As J.B. puts it, it steadily took over my life. I bought the shop from Bill in 99 so I wouldn't have to train a new owner. He's been dealing with the challenges facing independent booksellers ever since. Before writing novels, I produced feature films, including Ghost Stories starring Fred Astaire and Raggedy Man starring Sissy Spacek. My first novel, Inside Passage, was published in January 2013. My new novel, In Velvet, will be published this May. Teaser, the second book in the Corey Logan trilogy and the sequel to Inside Passage, will be published in the winter of 2014. All three books are published by Rare Bird Books. Hello, J.B. Thank you for joining
me. Hi, Bert. Thanks for inviting me.
I think I'd like to begin by asking you just to describe the Seattle Mystery Bookshop when it first opened.
The bookshop was opened, as you said, by Bill Farley, who had come here from Philadelphia. He had been a bookseller for a couple of decades at that point, and one of the Northwest's finest authors, Edgar Winning, Aaron Elkins, was in Philadelphia doing a book signing. And Aaron mentioned how Seattle needed a place like this. So Bill went home that day and told his wife that they were moving to Seattle. And, well, they had visited out here and liked it, and that was sort of the definitive key to get them going. So Bill had always envisioned the shop performing a number of functions. Certainly selling books, but also a place where people could come to meet authors, where authors would have a chance to meet new readers and old fans, as well as to be a resource for people looking for answers. And we've tried to do that in the 23 years since. The shop has changed location slightly. We're now 30 yards west of where we started.
I was going to ask that. Was it a smaller space at the beginning?
Yes, it was, but we expanded within that space once, taking over a little side room and making that into the office so we could expand the sales floor. So we've expanded twice over the 23 years. But other than those changes, it has very much stayed the same. It seems to be a peculiar Northwest thing to have new and used mixed together rather than have a separate used section. We've just always attempted to have as wide a selection of mysteries from Poe to the most contemporary for all kinds of tastes and all kinds of needs. There are people who want something dark and intense, and there are people who have dark and intense lives and want talking cats, and we have tried to cater to all of those tastes.
Were the expectations different for an independent bookstore in Seattle in 1990?
Well, that's a little bit more difficult for me to address because I wasn't involved in opening the shop. I just started with Bill in order to give him time to do non-bookselling things like bookkeeping.
I see.
I think it was... You have to remember that this would have been before Barnes & Noble. This is back in the era of B. Dalton's and Walden Books, the chain stores and all of the malls. But there really weren't large corporate stores at that point. So it was, in a way, still a gentleman's pursuit. There were... Seattle was filled with small, both general and specialized bookstores back then. It's changed quite a lot in the two decades, mostly because of the changes in the book world. Now, I would say it's a completely different environment for someone wanting to open a bookstore than it was in 1990.
What would you describe as your business model back in the 90s? Was it just mostly people coming in, taking orders on the phone? I mean, was it a similar kind of volume, or has it completely changed?
Certainly, I think it's a larger volume as we became more well-known to people around the planet. We also became more well-known to publishers. Seattle has always been highly regarded as a book town with lots of authors coming in, but it took us a while to persuade the publicists in New York to send us more and more of their bigger-name authors. So as that happened, as we got more of the big-name authors, then more of our mail orders increased. In there, too, you have to consider that when the shop first opened, we weren't computerized. There really wasn't all that much Internet yet. And all of the Internet ordering and all of the websites have sprung up again in the time that we've been here. So that has been a major change as well. So it's been a technological change in many ways, as much as growing by reputation and being known by people as a trustworthy source of good books.
Well, you certainly enjoy a terrific reputation. And let me ask this: how much time do you spend on the Internet these days? Are you corresponding with other mystery blogs, and are you blogging yourself, so on and so forth?
We have 4 blogs for the shop. We have sort of a general shop blog, and then we have, I guess it's just 3 blogs. We have 2 Tumblr blogs, one that my colleague Amber maintains that is, she calls it Books and Decay, and then I maintain one that's hard-boiled imagery. We also have a weekly thing we call a newsing that we send out to people, so we work on that all week. We're always out searching for interesting stories on the Internet, and usually while we're trying to eat our lunches. We are answering emails all the time. We're taking orders through biblio.com. We're taking orders through our website. So often I feel welded to my chair in front of the computer. It can be daunting how much time is spent in front of the computer.
And is that, in your view, greatly expanded your business, or is it sort of and I think I ought to preface this by saying I'd like you to talk a little bit about Amazon and how that's affected your business and the pros and cons of that Internet stuff.
Well, we call them Spectre. And the Internet, I think the Internet is just sort of a neutral element. It is a communications method that so many more people use. You and I probably can easily remember back when you had to call person to person, or some people were on trunk lines.
Yes.
A lot of our phone call orders have just gone to email orders as people have gotten used to doing everything by email. So in that way, our phone is available for more calls because so much more stuff goes through email. There is a little bit of a concern that we have over there's a remove between us and the customers if we're not talking on the phone. It's harder to make yourself understood. It's harder to understand questions that are being asked if they're not written out well. There isn't as much easy give and take in getting to know people through website orders or email orders as there is on the phone. You can't ask them how the weather is where they are. So that, I think, has made bookselling much less personal in a way. There's no chance to have the happy accident of someone saying, oh, well, what are you reading? Have you tried this? It's mm-hmm. similar to people ordering online instead of going into a shop and browsing. They're ordering one or two specific titles that they want, but they aren't coming in to see other things that, oh, yeah, I heard about this, or, oh, I read a review about that. That does look interesting. So they're ordering two or three books instead of coming in for two or three books but going out with five or six. So that affects everyone. That affects the bookseller. That affects the new author who wants exposure. It affects the publisher of the new author. All the way around, it narrows what's being sold, what's being seen, and what's being discovered.
Would you say you have less influence over your readership post-internet?
No. But we have less certainty that they're using our information to support us.
I see.
These
for
days,
example, if you, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, if you're putting out a blog with all kinds of information of books that you've read and recommend, for instance, you have no way of knowing that people are then turning around and ordering those books from you or ordering them from Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be doing the sales work for someone else. And that's a conundrum that we can't solve. How do you make sure that people are using what you do to buy books from you to support what you're doing? That's a really tricky question.
I get it. But also, I mean, as a new author, I mean, you aren't able to suggest to somebody, if they're not coming in to browse at the shop, try this book.
Correct.
You can put it out in a newsletter, but it's not the same as striking up a conversation where I just read this and there's this, are you interested in this, so on and so forth.
Exactly. It's much harder for someone to send an email saying, I'm interested in new books by, for instance, Northwest authors. Who could you recommend? If they come in the shop, then the next question is, well, what kind of books do you like? We can mm-hmm. sort of narrow it down and tailor it to their specific tastes. We can also walk them around and hand them a half dozen books and say, these are the latest. This is what these are about. Have a chair, look them over, see what looks interesting. That's a different tactile method of introducing people to books rather than writing out impersonal blurbs in an email. That's going to be something that the book world is going to have to wrestle with, just like the music world and the decimation of record stores. How do you get introduced to good stuff you can by people you trust? And the only way it's going to keep going is if people keep buying from booksellers and independents who know what they're talking about.
Interesting. How would you characterize Seattle and more generally the Pacific Northwest as a place for independent booksellers? I mean, is it a place where the independent bookstore has a little easier time? Do you have a sort of base of support, or is the support eroding in the Pacific Northwest as well?
I think, Seattle specifically has always had the reputation of being a great book town, meaning lots of bookstores, lots of dedicated readers, people who buy books, people who are intelligent book buyers and readers rather than people who will just occasionally pick up the new bestseller by author X whenever it comes out once a year. We have an awful lot of good independent booksellers, but of course we have far fewer than we did when this shop first opened. The reputation Seattle has certainly hasn't served everyone. We still get a good healthy flow of authors coming through town, we certainly have a good, healthy supply of local authors. But none of that is really going to make any difference if people don't buy their books from bookstores. And will they continue to do that? I don't know. The internet has made it so easy for people to buy online. And you asked earlier about Amazon. Amazon can discount as deeply as they want to get people locked into them. They don't have to make profits on books because they also sell tube socks and dryers and tires. And booksellers aren't like that. So if Amazon continues to swallow up all of the market, people are sooner rather than later going to find themselves with no one to buy books from than Amazon. And then there will be no personalized recommendations. There will be no personal interaction with people who also read. And that will be a great pity.
Yeah. How would you say Amazon has changed the sort of demographics of who comes into the shop, who reads?
I could not really say if it's changed the demographics. The anecdote I can say is that for the last 20 years, we've had a very strong base of readers and collectors, and that's two different subspecies of book buyers. The collectors are the ones who buy to specifically have a fine condition, probably signed copy of a favorite author, and they keep them and they keep them safe, and they're thinking of the books as a long-term investment. A reader is someone who certainly buys books, enjoys reading them, but they don't necessarily keep them. They maybe pass them on to coworkers or friends. They're more casual readers. I've noticed in the last couple of years, many of our long-term collector customers are now aging out of their homes and wanting to downsize. And they want, their kids don't care about their books. They don't have anyone to take their collection. They want their books to go to people who will value them as books. And I don't necessarily see, and I hope I'm wrong about this, but I don't see a younger generation coming up as collectors to buy the item, to own the item, to have
That's
it on their shelf. And I think that is one thing that e-books is robbing our culture of, an appreciation for the item and to have the item.
Would you say in general that younger people are buying more e-books than other kinds of books?
I don't know. We sell e-books through our website, but it's not like people coming in on their lunch hour and buying a stack of paperbacks. You don't see those sorts of immediate results, those immediate reports of how many copies of what are being sold. It's a much more... I guess I almost have to say shadowy world, because you don't see people who are buying e-books. You don't talk to people who are buying e-books. They don't come in and look for recommendations. They're doing it at home, and there's little to tell you what's selling and when. And, of course, the other aspect of this is there is no way for any bookstore or, for that matter, any major publisher to continue in business as they have been, selling e-books. You just cannot generate enough money.
Say a little more about that. I'm interested in that, and I don't fully understand
well,
it.
One of the great problems in publishing that I don't hear really anyone talking about is that for publishers to, and I'm talking about the big New York City publishers, the ones who have editorial staffs and marketing houses and publicists, the ones who can really sort of get authors noticed, get the word out on authors, those sorts of organizations have to sell hardcovers. Think of it as hardcover of the book world is the football program of the university. The football program brings in the money that allows, you know, gymnastics, lacrosse, whatever have you. It's what brings in the it's what brings in the big money for the athletic department. Hardcover is what brings in the big money for publishers and for booksellers. These days, as publishers have lost gazillions of sales of individual printed books to e-books, they have had to survive by rising prices of hardcovers. As hardcovers begin to be more expensive, an e-book of the same book is, say, half the price of the hardcover. So automatically the publishers are making the hardcover less competitive with the e-version. So it's this kind of a vicious cycle. And if you've got e-books that are $10, $15, then people also don't need to come into the bookstore to get it because the bookstore is trying to sell it at full price. So the publisher loses out, the bookseller loses out, and even if you can sell an electronic version of the book, you're not going to make as much money as you would in selling the hardcover. So you're making less money, which means less money to pay your bills, pay your employees, pay the rent, pay the publishers. And so there's less cash flow in the whole system. And at the same time, then you've got the competition for both e-books and printed books from a place like Amazon that, again, is willing to undercut everyone and not make a profit on them just to lock in a customer base. So there are many issues about this that are uncharted territory for everyone.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about, because it sounds like there's a lot of headwinds for the independent bookseller. And I'm wondering if when you sit around and talk with, you know, your colleagues about your business model going forward, I mean, are there new things you think about for, 2015 or 2020?
Well, first of all, I don't sit around with colleagues and brainstorm. What we do here is so different from what a general bookseller does that there's really no way to talk about much. Since we're a specialty shop and since we have new and used, that sets us apart, and there's really not a lot of similarity in what we do versus what someone else does. As for plans or business models or changes in this or that, we're always trying new things. We Facebook, we tweet. As I said, we've got blogs. We send out, as I said, the weekly newsing to people. We have a quarterly newsletter. There isn't anything that doesn't come up that we don't try to see if it'll have an effect, if it'll get more people in. But it's a matter of people are buying fewer books these days.
I was going
to
ask
that's what
about
it comes
that.
Down to. It's just the way it goes.
Do you think that this is irreversible, that this sort of less readership, more competition on the internet, Amazon undercutting prices, this sort of, unstoppable, or is there any hope for some sort of breakthrough that might turn this around?
Well, you can read stories these days in various publications, magazines, that the sale of ebooks has plateaued, that the sale of the reading devices has plateaued or started to decline. You can read stories that book sales are up, that more and more independent booksellers are opening here and there. So there is reason to think that the fascination with the gizmos and the new technology may have hit its high point. That's not to say that they're going to go away, because they certainly do have their place for travelers, for the casual reader. The question is going to be, do the people who really love the book, holding the thing, are those people going to come back or keep up supporting the independents? There are so many other things that are involved in all of this. It's not just the technology of books. It's not just the book world. You asked about why there are so many independent booksellers in Northwest. To a degree, I think that's kind of political. We in the Northwest tend to be far more liberal and far more willing to support small businesses almost as a political act, to not support the big conglomerates, to want to support the little guy. I think to a degree in the Northwest there's a greater grasp that it's these small people who do so much for the culture and so much for the community as opposed to the big corporations. So we have that going for us. It's a very tricky thing, and if I could predict how it was all going to go, I'd buy lottery tickets.
Well, I was going to talk a little bit about the culture, because part of what you describe is a change in the culture in the last 20, 30 years. I mean, and it's possible that, and the Northwest is a little different in that way. I mean, in exactly the way that you describe, and it's possible that it could become more so. I mean, it's possible that the culture could take a turn where people wanted to hang out in bookstores, and they wanted to talk to knowledgeable people about books, and they wanted to meet people that were readers, so on and so forth. I mean, that's not necessarily gone for good.
Well, the trick of it is, and we've been trying to educate people for 2 or 3 years now, that if you do value those sorts of things, you have to support the shop that is doing what you like. If you don't, they'll be gone. And before you know it, what you want won't be there anymore. I was going to say, too, talking about outside forces, Seattle was hit very hard, 5 years ago, when Washington Mutual collapsed. That was a huge employer downtown. We lost an awful lot of customers. And I certainly hope that they all got new jobs, but there's no reason to think that they, I have to, in fact, believe that their new jobs weren't downtown, because we never saw them again. So there are forces outside publishing in the book world that have a play in this, and it's nice to think that people are going to come back to books and supporting booksellers. But then we have to have a population that has disposable income so that they can do that. And at the same time, then, you have publishers raising the price of the books more and more when people have less and less disposable income. So the alternative, the cheap alternative to continue to read, is a place that steeply discounts or ebooks. So,
well,
it's a conundrum.
I want to compliment you for creating the culture that you have created in the bookshop, and I want to encourage people to support it, because it would be a terrible loss, not just for Seattleites, but for those of us who still order from the bookstore and come in when we're in Seattle. And I want to thank you for talking so openly and candidly about the situation in your business. And I look forward to seeing you again when I'm next in Seattle.
Thank you, Bert. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about it and the interest. It's it's certainly an interesting time to be in the book business, and the more people understand it, maybe the more they'll support the independents that are around them.
Well, I'll be in touch with you, and I'll send you a link to the interview.
Thanks, Bert.
Thank you, JB. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Left you on the debris. Now we both know you got the money, and I wonder what you would have done.